and welcome back to this week's episode of the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast, sponsored as always by those rather lovely people at Natural Grower. Now, Natural Grower supply plant-based products for both organic and chemical-free gardening and your houseplants. They're absolutely crammed with certified organic growing power, and if you're looking for amazing results with all of your fruit and veg, your flower beds and houseplants, then Natural Grower's award-winning, certified, organic, peat-free compost and fertiliser are the very best you can buy. And your plants and gardens will love you for using it. All products are certified organic, they're 100% chemical-free and 100% peat-free. And those rather lovely people at Natural Grower have given me an exclusive 15% discount off all products for my listeners. Just pop MIC15 into the apply coupon field when you check out. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast. This week, I chat to a guy who I've got to know quite well in recent years and count him as a friend, although we haven't yet met in real life, and that, I guess, is the unbelievable and intriguing thing about social media for you. I first spoke to TJ on Instagram during one of the early lockdowns, and we have quite a lot of similarities between us, but a love of art, colour and gardening and plants is foremost. So today, after a ridiculous amount of technical issues trying to get this sorted out, thank you, Simon, we eventually got to chat, and it's a most delightful chat. One of the best chats I've ever had on the podcast, as we talk about TJ's love of art, nature, colour, gardening, and his brand new book, Grounded in the Garden, an artist's guide to creating a beautiful garden in harmony with nature. Now, we talk about all manner of things, as you will find out. So without any further ado, here is that chat. Thank you so much for eventually joining the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast. I've been looking forward to chatting to you for weeks now, having read your wonderful book, Grounded in the Garden, an artist's guide to creating a beautiful garden in harmony with nature, published by Pimpernel Press on the 7th of March.
Just coming up soon.
You and I believe, have something in common, a few things in common. A, neither of us are brilliant with technology, as we've found out this morning, but we're both artists. You're an artist. I'm also an artist as well. And I just wanted to know, really, sort of like, where did that love of art come from initially? And then we'll obviously go in and talk about your garden in the book.
I've always, as a kid, I used to paint and draw all the time, and I wasn't into other subjects at school. I remember that I actually had to go to the nearest convent, to the nuns' convent school, to actually study art, because we didn't have art. I went to a Christian Brothers school here, mm-hmm. in Ireland, and I had to go specifically to the nuns to study art, because I decided I was going to go to art college. Because every other class went over my head, business, economics. I found them incredibly boring, and I was always in the back doodling in my notebook and drawing. And I thought, I want to do art, you know. So that was it, really. And then I went to art college in Cork and in Dublin as well.
So were there any artists in your family? My mother was an artist, so I assumed I got it from her.
Okay, no, my uncle is a draftsman, but apart from that, no artists weren't in my family.
And what, when it came to artwork, was there anything in particular you liked to draw? I used to like portraits. I used to draw people.
For me, it went more the line very abstract, which to do with emotional content in painting, Mike. So like, kind of like Mark Rothko kind of stuff and abstract expressionism. It was really about capturing the content of feeling in the paintings. I wasn't interested in particularly in painting landscapes or portraits or something that was just very obvious to look at.
Mm.
So, yeah.
And was colour, because my pictures are black and white now, I use pen and ink. I've used watercolour and oils, but colour, I'm sort of hoping, was really important to you.
Colour was always very important, because that translated, that's supposed to be emotion, really, in a color, and most of my paintings were kind of, most of them were actually kind of blues and greens and that kind of meditative colors, you know, and changing the colors like very, very carefully and specifically changing the tones of the colors, because you know they read differently according to the color actually. You know, you were moved in a certain way. If they got darker, they got broodier, of course, or they were lighter, then they were maybe just a bit more joyous or something. So it was, I mean, that's a simple way to explain it. But it was about how we're affected to color. Yeah, and my painting was that. They were emotionally charged.
And I think art is emotionally charged, but you're talking past tense, were, was.
Oh,
Are
yeah.
you still painting now?
I had my last exhibition in 2018, 2019 in the Taylor Galleries in Dublin. And then, of course, I stopped painting for years as well. So I only started back a good few years before that to do that exhibition. But then, of course, we bought land next door in 2020. So that changed everything, of course, because I started developing the garden. And then, of course, just a few years ago in COVID as well, I decided I was going to write a book. So painting, I haven't painted actually since then. So I've been very busy.
Well, the same here. I haven't actually done any artwork for quite a few years. I think the
Have you
last
not?
thing I did a picture of my partner,
Ah.
probably about, well, that was in lockdown actually, and then the garden and lockdown and other things came along. So let's pick up on the gardening front then. So for you, what are your first gardening memories? Were there gardeners in the family?
My granddad on my mother's side was a fantastic gardener. Well, to me, he seemed like a fantastic gardener when I was young. He had a beautiful garden, and even back in the day, this is back in the 70s, he had a huge collection of dahlias, and I'm not sure where he got those back then in Ireland, you know, because you couldn't get these things very easily. But he had fantastic. He probably got them through mail order art that existed back then. Probably, I think it probably did for him. Yeah, he had a beautiful garden, and the traffic on the street used to slow down. The cars would slow down to look into his garden. That's my memory, and I loved going to his garden, looking at everything. Having said that, he didn't really pick up that I loved it and my interest in it. He didn't kind of show me around, or was gardening for me kind of was a secret thing as well. I didn't necessarily share it to people that I loved it or that I loved animals, because
Yeah, I can relate
I
to that. There
think,
were certain
can
things
you?
as, yeah, as a schoolboy, I guess I knew I was maybe slightly different from the other guys in the class, and I was
Yeah.
maybe more sensitive and was aware of that, but decided that it was probably best to keep that to myself.
Your love of nature and gardening and
Nature,
everything else,
gardening,
your difference.
yeah, it's sort of like I had, and the art thing, there was this artistic
Yeah.
side. And sort of like reading the book and some of the words you've written in the book, a lot of that is struck a chord with me on many levels.
Did it. Okay. Well, that's lovely to hear. And just what you're saying then about going back then, I suppose I was a different child as well. I was a different kid. I was very, very different to other kids. I didn't want to play football. I hated when I was pulled onto a team. I hated
I was always the last to be
it. In
picked. I
fact,
was
I
always sort
was as
of,
well.
yeah,
I
and
was
they.
always the last.
I think
Always
there's
the
an instinctive, although you didn't talk about
last.
things, there was an instinctive sort of like, we don't want Palmer on our side. So I was one of the last ones to be chosen.
And this brings me back to memories of, as I've been very young in national school, been 6 and 7, and been last to be picked on the team. And I remember kicking, I scored a goal and I got it into my own goal. Apparently, I was playing the wrong direction. So that's my clearest memory of that, and the hounding of abuse I got for that.
I
Proud.
remember playing football and the ball was coming towards me and I was running away from the ball and they were shouting, Palmer, kick the ball. And there was just, I just wanted to, I didn't want to get my football kit dirty.
Yeah. Michael, we should have been playing on the same team. We probably are
Well,
playing the
we wouldn't have done
same
very well, would we? Two
team. No,
members
we
of the
wouldn't.
team, it would have been
No,
pretty a big handicap for the rest of the team.
we wouldn't. But I was always different, like what you said as well. I was always very different as a child. I suppose my sexuality as well. I just, you know, when I came to teenage years, I wasn't looking at girls, and I wasn't. So I suppose there was, not a loneliness to that, but you didn't really run with the herd. So I spent a lot of my time outdoors and actually away from people, being very honest. I mean, my childhood wasn't the happiest time of my life in a lot of ways, and I just loved being on my own. And for me, that was outside in nature. So I was very observant as a child and a teenager of everything outside, even though I mightn't have necessarily known the names of the creatures and the insects, and but I just fascinated by watching it. And then I kept that love of nature very secretive as well, because it wasn't something that was very maybe what boys did. And I had an elder brother, and he used to be running around on combines and tractors as a kid, because my dad was an agricultural tra contractor, so I had no interest in driving tractors. And I suppose then loving nature wasn't seen to be something maybe boys did. So maybe I was told that on a few occasions, possibly. I think I was as well. So I kind of learned to keep it more for my own joy, really. And that's been a very funny thing to have written the book about this, because I've written the book about all the things I loved as a child, and to speak up for them and get people to love them and show the beauty of them. So actually, it's come full circle. All the things I thought I should be quiet about, and now I'm in my 60th year and I'm actually shouting for them. So, and it's a nice thing, I have to say.
Yeah, we've been on a similar journey. I'm also, I mean, 60 last year, and I think those things that you hid away from the rest of school or from your life, you now embrace, celebrate, and champion it. Isn't it strange that
Yeah, it is
you come
actually,
on
isn't
that
it?
forward, you use the J word, that journey?
Yeah.
So from school then, you had this love of art, and you went to the National College of Art and Design in 1988.
I did. Another thing to make me different to the crowd, of course.
And at that time, did you have an idea of what you wanted to do for a career? Was art going to be your career?
Yeah, I was going to art college to become an artist. I hadn't really thought it through that. I mean, it wouldn't be something that would necessarily get you very much money and all of that, as you know. But especially when you're a teenager and you choose these things, there's a naivety to it as well. You just do something and say, well, I love art, so that's what I want to do. I didn't want to do business. I didn't want to do all the other things that were studied in secondary school, So it was my love was painting, drawing, and nature. So if it wasn't that, it would have been something to do with animals or.
So then, after art college, what happened then? Because I know you eventually went on to work at or to be a student at the National Botanic Gardens in Dublin. But what about those intervening years? What were you doing then?
I worked as an artist for a good few years after leaving college, and I was with a gallery in Dublin. And then myself and Simon moved down here to County Wicklow, and Simon, my partner, and he has a very good job, and he's always had, he's been in business and, a wage and all of that. And of course, he met me, the artist, and I had just, being an artist. Money wasn't that guaranteed to come in every month. So, and I suppose being very honest about it, Mike, I felt an obligation that we had a mortgage all of a sudden because we bought a house together. And I mean, I just wanted to play my part in that. I didn't want him paying the mortgage and me just painting in the background. So I decided that we used to go to a local garden centre here as well, because of course I got straight into the garden straight away when we bought here. And we used to visit the garden centre. I thought, I'd love to work somewhere like this with plants and, showing people plants and selling plants and all of that. So I decided then that I was actually going to go back to the Botanic Gardens in Dublin and train to be a gardener.
Okay, I wondered where that connection was. So the house came first, and then this need to do something with the garden space.
And the way to make money, I'd have a qualification in horticulture, and then I could do something with that more easily than with art, Having said that as well, I mean, I worked for many years in Dublin in psychiatric hospitals as kind of the artist on board, if it were, so the therapist, art therapy, and all of that. And that was really, really interesting. And I did that while I was painting to supplement, in between exhibitions and while I was painting. I did some of that a few days a week in different hospitals. And I loved that. I mean, I loved working with people in that capacity.
So you had this house and attached
I have.
garden. When you were at the National Botanic Gardens, did you start to build an idea of what you wanted to do with the garden, or had you got that idea anyway?
No, I had the garden already. I did I did the course in the Botanic Gardens purely to, I suppose, tick a box really that I had a qualification in it. And I didn't particularly enjoy the course. Actually, I didn't enjoy the course,
Why
probably
was
shouldn't have.
that?
It was very geared towards, I suppose, landscaping, and there was a lot of everything was seen as a pest and a disease, and it was very
Yeah.
different. I mean, color wasn't ever addressed in the course. It's amazing, really. Color wasn't part of that, or loving nature. Everything was a pest and a disease, and that, I suppose, that horrified me. I'm not sure I should be saying this, but it did horrify me. Absolutely horrified me. And so I didn't really fit in that. I mean, I'm not saying about the people. There've been lovely people in my class, but I
Yeah.
just didn't make sense to me, any of it. It just wasn't my type of gardening. I garden privately here, and it's still the way I garden now. I suppose very holistically, or I try to tread lightly on the garden, and it is about all the little creatures we have, like at the moment outside I can see them from here, all the frogs in the pond all leaping about. And of course, they all live here. So I try to be respectful to all the creatures that live here. And it is about color and creativity as well. And that wasn't, I suppose, any of that wasn't really addressed enough on the course for me.
Which is
I suppose
strange, isn't it? That's
it
the
is.
color
It
thing
is.
in particularly.
Absolutely. And I suppose, I think as well, when you go back to do something as a more mature student, I was 30 years of age when I went back to the Botanic Gardens, and I already had my degree in painting behind me, and that whole creative thing where you actually, you went to art college and you set your own standards and your own expression and what you wanted to do. You were very much on your own journey. You still had tutors helping you and guiding you and giving you advice, but it was very much your own personal journey to paint and to express yourself. So then having to go back, or going back as a mature student, I think you have higher standards maybe of everything.
Yeah,
I'm
oh,
not sure
definitely.
of everything. So for me then, I was just no. I just didn't. I did the course just to do it, really. I mean, a lot of people loved the course, and it just wasn't for me, really.
Yeah. So course completed, you have this beautiful garden, or you have this garden at Patana.
I do.
How did you then, did you have a vision? How did you start creating this beautiful garden that you now have?
And we opened it to the public as well. And
Yeah.
it was never the plan. I was just kind of, I potter, you know, I always, I, I've always gardened here since I moved here. And then, a few people wanted to see it. And then I got more and more. And then I left. I was working actually with autistic adults for 16 years up to about 4 years ago as well as painting and gardening here. And I decided something had to give, because more and more people wanted to see the garden here. And it wasn't up to the standard that I really wanted to show it either. It was okay, but it's, well, yeah,
Well, I'm going to have to stop you there, because if people want to see a garden, it's generally more than okay. So whatever you had done, and then I know you said it wasn't what you wanted it to be, but it was obviously good enough for people to stop and say, I want to go and see this.
it was, but for me, it could have been, if it had more of my hours, I know I could have met it. It could have been more. It's
Okay.
like everything else; it takes your time, So then I decided to give up that job of the carer work and had my exhibition again. And then, of course, we got the place next door, and now it's just I give all my energy to the garden. So, and the garden is much nicer for that. It's a much better garden in every which way. It's a much better garden because it gets all my energy.
Yeah, and you can see that. I've not visited the garden,
Yeah,
which
you have
I
to.
need to get sorted, because it's one thing seeing it in a book or on social media, but being a passionate gardener myself and this love of colour, what you have done there, and which is in the book as well, very, very clear to see, there are just pictures everywhere of beautiful colours that have been woven together by a master painter. And I wondered what your process is from start to finish. You've just acquired a new part of the garden. How do you start? Where do you actually start putting this together? How do you do it?
Thank you for those lovely compliments. First, that's very nice. The new tour garden, I actually just made it up And I suppose it's the creative part of me, the artist in me. I can't sit down on paper to do it because I need to be outside looking at everything, looking at the trees and looking at the landscape and reading that. And I think as well, a garden kind of it reveals to you what it wants to become, I think.
Yes.
I'm not probably explaining that properly, but it's not about putting your imprint, what you want to do in the space. It's about, doing it with a sensitivity as to what's around it already and what it is already, to the landscape around it. For here, with the church next door, it's about
Yeah.
bringing that in, bringing the landscape in, and echoing the shapes of the mountains, and just being very sensitive to the space that itself, and let it reveal itself to me what it wanted to become. So we got a guy in with a digger, and I actually worked ahead of the bucket of the digger. And at one stage, I remember one day I said, you have to just take your lunch or something because I'm not sure where this path is going next. So literally, I was working ahead of the digger, and I was thinking, God, if this doesn't, if I do all this, if I design this badly, or it's not, if I have to go back on this, it'll be very expensive. But actually, I did it. It was perfect. I love what I've done. But again, it was about standing in the space, like, looking at something in the distance. Well, the path needs to be here actually to take in that view. And if I actually bring it maybe somewhere else, I'll actually miss this. So about reading everything, even outside the garden all of the time, and then seeing where the garden was going to sit within that general, within the context of, I suppose, the surrounding landscape.
So it's very holistic, looking outwards, taking in, making those decisions based on what is outside of the garden.
Yes, very much so. And then of course the plants was just whatever I wanted to plant. So, and of course it is about color, of course, putting colors together. And for me, plants for wildlife, a lot of it's herbaceous and annuals and stuff. So it's different every year. And of course, for me, I like that because it gives me space to be creative. I don't want a garden that you don't have to do much in all year round. If you had loads of evergreens and conifers, a certain type of garden. I like the fact that it's high maintenance and I have to. Maybe it's a little bit too high maintenance now.
Do you know, hallelujah to that, because I've worked as a jobbing gardener as well. And if I had a pound for every person that said to me, I want a low maintenance garden, I would be very rich. And my garden, like yours, I love the high maintenance aspect of it because that is gardening.
It
And we're all
is.
different, obviously. We all have different needs and requirements. What's your soil like?
My soil, it's very wet since last September. I was telling you this earlier. But it's acid soil. So we can grow, rhododendrons, different things. I don't grow those plants, but I have acid soil. And it's more free draining in the land that we bought compared to the original garden here, which is a much older, heavier soil. So, but I've never, people ask me all the time, what do I feed the plants with and what do I mulch and all of this? And I don't mulch and I don't feed anything.
Okay,
So
that's yeah,
that's a quick answer, but I mean, it's the truth. I mean,
and that's there.
nature recycles itself all the time, of course. If you're not taking away leaves and all of that, self-regenerating.
So we've just come out of a long grey winter. How does the garden look during winter? Because again, it's like a lot of herbaceous there. So.
Yeah, and someone on Instagram the other day said, "Can you just put up a photograph of what that looks like now?" And I said, "Well, you have to use your imagination. It's very brown. There's wheelbarrows around the place, and it doesn't look like this." But it is like it's only February.
Exactly, yeah.
I planted into the meadow. We're creating a meadow next door with the field that we bought. A section of it has been kept as a meadow, and of course we put yellow rattle and different things. But we planted 3,000 bulbs into that last autumn. So there's hundreds of crocuses coming up
Oh,
at the
lovely.
minute, and they're absolutely gorgeous. And that's what I love, going back to the whole high maintenance that we were spoke about, Mike, that you go out every day and it's changing all of the time. So each season is different, and each season here is different because there are new plants. And I like gardening for that because it's very engaging all of the time then.
You said we planted. Is Simon a gardener or you head gardener
I'm the head boss.
and
I can say that he's not in the room,
Well,
but he
that's
does
why
have.
I'm talking so freely as well, because my other half is actually at work, but I'm very clearly the head gardener here. So just head gardener to head gardener.
No, he helps me, of course, in the garden. It's mainly me, but I have volunteers here as well. I'm very lucky. Even at the moment, I have two ladies outside here working. So since we got the new garden, I suppose that was the challenge of I wasn't going to do a high maintenance garden in the land that we bought because there's It's because it's high maintenance. And as we get older as well, it's more challenging. The energy levels aren't quite where we are at 50 or
I'm
40.
glad you said that. I thought it was just me.
No, it's not just you.
So you're head gardener and you do have some help in the garden as well.
And that's what I was going to say, Mike, about the new garden next door, the talk garden. I was going to just keep it very, very simple, put a greenhouse out there, maybe keep some chickens or something. And just the backdrop for this garden, because this is a high maintenance garden we've had for years. And then I just kept going, and it just became a more high maintenance garden next door. And I started kind of doing what I've always done, this high maintenance, a lot of work garden. But and that's at that point, I reached out if anybody wanted to help me for volunteers. And I have a lovely team of volunteers. So it makes it possible that I can garden like this because I do have help. I do have
Wonderful.
help now. But of course, I am the
Absolutely, absolutely. You touched on
head.
social media just a moment ago. When did you set up your social media account to showcase the garden? And did you have a reason behind that, or was it just for yourself?
Originally, I had Facebook, and then somebody told me just only a few, but maybe 5 years ago or so, that I needed to do Instagram, and I knew absolutely nothing about Instagram. As we spoke earlier, I'm not a technical person. I have to say I'm not. I want to do a reel for my book. I'm not sure how to do that either. I'm just not technical. Simon is very good. But at the same time, I take my own photographs of the garden, and I suppose people love my photographs because I compose them like a painting. I know how to hold the phone to compose a composition within the frame of a photograph. So people, and that goes back to the book as well. People, you say you need to make a book or something of your photographs. So that seed was always there in the background as well to writing the book.
So let's pick up on that then. That seed was there, as you say. Did you have in your mind what that book would be? And is the book that you now have that same book, or has it adapted and changed along the journey?
It's been a funny journey and a fantastic journey. And it was what we were saying earlier, Mike, about growing up young and being different and all of that. And it's like I've just put all the things I loved, and about myself as well. I suppose I have what I call spiritual musings through this book. And I decided at the very beginning I just didn't want to write another. There are so many garden books out there anyway, and information is so readily available. We can Google so much. So I wanted to be more personal about this garden, about what I love, and actually speaking up for nature. That was a huge, probably one of the main reasons I wanted to write, was because nature's in trouble, and that really bothers me an awful lot. So I wanted to lend my voice to that, but I also wanted to have a spiritual, more personal, kind of content flowing through the book. So I call them my musings, or spiritual kind of reflections from the garden. Just what I've learned, because I suppose going back again to when I was very young, I suppose I did take myself away from people. Being very honest, I did. I was much more happy in the company of animals than people. I still am, probably. I'm much happier in the company of animals. So it was about when I'm in spaces like that, in the outdoors, the garden, or in the landscape, anywhere, that's kind of where I do my best thinking, I suppose. I think we all can.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because it supports us. Spaces like that are nurturing and they're supportive. So you can go into them, you can go into the garden or into the landscape with something on your mind, but you can come to a solution in an easier way than maybe waking up at 5 in the morning, lying in the bed, stressing about something. It's conducive to holding you and supporting you and showing you. So that's what my musings are about, showing you how nature goes from moment to moment and day to day, how nature survives, and how I learned from that. So I did say at my introduction that this book is a book about love, and it sounds a strange thing to put into a garden book, but for me, ultimately, it's about a book about love for other plants, for nature, and for myself as well, for the people.
It doesn't sound strange at all, because
Doesn't that? Okay.
when I read the book, that's what struck a chord with me, this spirituality, the love, the passion, which is, it's not a tangible thing. People like plants, people like gardens, but there's this, on a sensitive level, if nothing else, And that's what I picked up from your words. And I sent you a message the other day, and I will ask you to maybe just read out something from your introduction, which really struck a chord with me. We'll
Okay.
maybe do that at the end. But I wondered, these musings of yours, how easy did you find it to actually put the words onto paper, onto a screen, and actually write? How did you find the writing process
Of the musings or the book in general,
of
Mike?
the book in general? Yeah,
Well, the book in general was a huge challenge to me, as you know, because technically, I had to. I am. Somebody said you have to. You start to do it on Word. I said I don't know what Word is or where it is on my computer. So I had to get Simon. So he got me the pages up, and that was fine because the pages kind of flow one into the next, But then if I wanted to do a new chapter, I had to say, Simon, I need a new page. And I haven't progressed a whole lot, if I'm very honest. But I did. I actually loved the process of writing.
And did you have a set
I loved
time or a set
it.
place to write, or did
No,
you
I
need to?
didn't.
No?
I didn't. I reached out to Jane Parrish, she's the Irish garden
Yeah.
writer, and because I know her, and I just sent her a message to say that I'm thinking of writing a book. What do you think? And I thought she said, "Well, there's so many books," and I was so unsure of myself, really, of maybe what I had to say and what I could offer. But at the same time, I knew I wanted to have to speak in a more spiritual way. I suppose I'm a very spiritual person, and really just show people the beauty of nature. So she said, absolutely, start writing. So I just wrote a piece and I gave it up to her. I sent it to her, and then of course she found all kind of problems with it. Because I wasn't used to writing, of course, to words. Like repeating, we've spoken about this a bit because you're writing now yourself.
I am,
And we
yeah.
have a tendency for pet words that we like. I use the word little a lot. The little frogs in the little pond having a little swim, everything. And we have our own habits, of course. So I learned a lot through her, of her just pointing out certain things, not repeating sentences or not repeating an idea and keeping everything very tight. So I learned an awful lot. But I love the process of sitting down and I suppose painting, it's very different to painting, because painting I was trying to put on a canvas or whatever I was painting on how I felt inside, but in a very visual way. And of course now I was doing this through words, and I'm not a wordsmith or anything, so that was interesting to me. So I had my thesaurus and different things,
Thank heavens for
and
thesaurus.
ah yeah, isn't it great? You can find alternatives to the word little.
Well, mine is
Small.
beautiful.
Oh,
Mine's, yeah, beautiful,
yeah.
beautiful, beautiful. So, yeah.
That was another one of mine. Yeah, we tend to do that. So there, that was it, really.
So now the book is completed and we have it in front of us. Has that given you a confidence in your own written voice? Because I think that's the thing. You find a vo you have a voice, and putting that voice down in words on paper or on a computer, does that sit comfortably with you now? Do you have
It
confidence?
does. Yeah, I do, and I do have confidence, and that was one of the I suppose it was a challenge as well in writing that, because I know what I feel. I suppose I know what I feel in my heart, how I feel, and it always goes back to emotion, doesn't it? What you feel, and but trying to find the words that express that feeling, that was the I won't say the word challenge because it wasn't a challenge, but it meant I had to rewrite the sentences over and over sometimes. And I remember Jane sending me a message one day and she said, how are you getting on writing? And I was actually writing when I got the message. And I said, well, I said, I've spent 3 hours and I've three sentences done. And she said, welcome to the world of writing. And I thought, all right,
Okay.
okay. All right. Yeah, that's what I thought. Phew, indeed. Because I just thought, I can't write, because I couldn't find the words to express how I felt. So it meant, taking out words, making it slightly flowy or having maybe slightly more emotional how it sounded when I read it back loud again. So that was a lovely journey to do that. And of course, my musings were very important in that as well. I wanted to express how I felt, how I felt. And I wanted the musings, well, I wanted all of the book, but specifically the musings, because they are kind of how what I have learned through nature and how I've maybe learned. I suppose it comes from our past as well, being young and not fitting in and blah 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 blah, and of course, trying to, I suppose, as we move forward in our lives and as we get older, loving ourselves maybe in a way that we didn't when we were younger, because we just didn't feel we should or we could or we were or whatever it was. And it's only now, actually, in these years that, and I still am trying to love who I am. That's been very honest, and it's that's what it is. And I think, but I know that every single person I speak to, everyone has their challenges, and there's nobody completely at home and have everything resolved. Everybody I know, and I know a lot of people, everyone has stuff, you know? And I didn't want to write just about my stuff. I wanted to write it in a way that people could relate to it and go, I feel like that. And that's interesting that actually you feel you can sit and, like, for example, watching the trees let go of their leaves in the autumn. And I've done this, watching them let go. And I feel like there's certain things I'm just not able to let go of, or I haven't been able. And maybe it's take my lead from that nature trust that you have to let go sometimes in order just to let something new in. You have to let something else go. So all of these kind of things that I've always seen all around me in nature and fascinated by and adopted then. How do I live? Like, how do I do that? If the birds and animals can kind of just go at the moment and live in the season, and what are my obstacles that I can't seem to do that sometimes in my life? So that's a very personal way to speak, isn't it? I know it is. And I don't mind doing it at this hour of my life, because I know that people, when I do speak like this, I know people love when I speak like this because they relate to that. And of course, and it's the other thing of social media as well, that, you're putting out the best of you all the time. And in one way, it's very fake. Because you see, when they say this with social media, you measure yourself against other people, like, oh, such and such, he's doing great, she's doing great, and they're having a great life. And but people aren't putting up the harder moments of their life.
Yeah,
They're putting up
the best of.
the best of, But life isn't the best of. It's the best of and the worst of, and it's all of it. So I wanted to be very honest, writing this, that, about loving ourselves through the challenges in our life and how to walk gently with ourselves. That's what I think. Would you like the introduction of,
Yeah, and clearly not just the introduction. I mean, the words you've shared with us there about loving yourself and coming full circle and now being able to have a voice. At school, I sunk into the shadows. I didn't have a voice. I wouldn't say boo to a goose. I was very lacking in confidence. Whereas now with the gardening, I'm finding that voice in the same. And so everything you have just said, I can say, yes, completely understand where you're coming from, because that is me now, that confidence that's now come through something that you kept quiet as a youngster. You can now celebrate and say, this is me, this is who I am, and begin to love yourself for being
Who
you.
you are. Yeah,
Yeah,
absolutely.
which is
And
wonderful.
you're very good at it. I just think you come across as being very confident, and with your social media and everything. I don't like appearing in front of a computer, and I don't like all of that. I find it challenging sometimes. So, but again, that's part of the journey of doing that. I mean, when I went up to 5 years ago, when I left my job, I had to, attend training courses and everything, as you do. And I always sat at the back. And in school, I always sat at the back, always. And it was a way of disappearing so that nobody saw you, or, and here I am now, and I'm, presenting to clubs and societies, and I'm up here with a microphone standing the other way around. And 10 years ago, you could have given me all the money in the world, and I could not and would not have done that. So
So, yeah,
it's funny, isn't
completely. I back at the classroom
it?
trying to hide. But now I can stand up, I can talk to people. So yeah, you change and you love yourself.
Absolutely. And well, and congratulations to you for that.
And well,
Isn't it a lovely thing?
it is. I think sort of given sort of like our similar starts and how we felt being at school, and the differences, to be able to just stand up now, and I think with age comes this, you don't
Does.
care, but you still want people to love and respect you for who you are, rather than trying to be a different version of yourself to please the people.
Yeah, absolutely. And
Interesting.
I've given up that completely. Well, not that I ever did that, I have to say. I was always myself, and I suppose because I was that, I suppose some people could find me even challenging, because I don't say what I think I should say,
You say what you, yeah.
I don't. I'm always kind of myself. But then, as I said, as you get older, you just, well, you have to just honor who you are. Because I know that I have, I suppose, lived in the shadows a lot in my life because I've been afraid to step out into the light. You know, many of us are like that. So, and this book has been very cathartic for me to write, I have to say.
I bet.
I'm very proud of this book because it is personal in a lot of well in a lot on a lot of levels with the musings, and it just feels like an achievement. It's hard to express it really. And I suppose seeing the garden as well, like, you know, years and years of photographs and seeing them all in a book and go, you know, actually, all the photographs have been, the borders have been created, and then the photograph is taken, the book has been put together, and all the words brought in. And yeah, it feels like an achievement. So I'm very, very proud of it.
And so
And
you should be.
my biggest wish is that I suppose people, I suppose, I have two wishes really for it. I mean, there's a lot of practice. I mean, it's a practical garden book, of course. Of course, it is creating borders and garden design, how to use color. That's a whole chapter in itself, which is fascinating and important. But I suppose apart from that, I want people to pick up on the personal, and that I'd hope that they'd be walk more gently through their own lives and have more compassion for themselves. Because I think we all lack that, we give it to other people sometimes, I think, easier than we give it to ourselves.
So
So,
true, yeah,
isn't it? So
absolutely.
I want people to pick up on that actually, yeah, and it's out there in nature just to support us and to be who we are, you know? And then of course the other big thing is that I really want to fly something for the environment. And I said it before, like, I nearly see this book as a cry for help, really, for the environment, because it's in such trouble. And it is, but first and foremost, it's a complete celebration of the beauty of it all. You
And it
know,
really is.
nature. Yeah, and I've said this before. I said it in a talk recently. Yes, I tend to. I can speak very personally. I think people relate to that because people are afraid to speak personally. I said that nature saved me growing up as a child, and I know that. I know that nature has saved me all my life. All my life. When the going gets tough, nature has saved me. So, and I just felt that. I want to give it back. I want to, this book is for nature. It's a thank you to nature, to plants and to animals, you know, and lend my voice to them and help them, you know.
That's lovely. Wow.
Well,
That's
yeah.
emotional stuff.
Is
Said the sensitive guy on the end of the line.
it fun? One sensitive guy to another.
One thing I've missed out, you talked about this idea of writing a book. We now have the book. How did the book actually come about? Did someone come to you and say, wow, we need to do something?
No, I approached Pimpernel Press
Yep.
in London, and it was Jane actually told me I need to actually give them a, what's the word? It's gone out. You give them a sample.
Synopsis or
No, a sample finished chapter, actually completely
okay,
finished.
yeah.
So I had it. It was edited. Jane edited it for me. I wrote it. She edited it, and I had actually a book designer actually design the chapter. So it actually went to Pimpernel as a finished piece. And
Okay.
this was, I mean, I had only started writing. Well, I was maybe a few chapters done. I had a few chapters done. And of course, and they loved it. And I gave them, there was a musing in that as well. So, and then I explained what the book was about, who I was, and they loved it. Jo in Pimpernel Press, she's been lovely, and she loves the book. And she told me one day, we were chatting on the phone, and she said she took all my musings out of the book. And there's only seven musings, but I mean, they're important and they're lovely things. She said she took them all out and she put them in a little folder of her own, and she keeps them beside her bed and she reads them. And I
Oh,
thought,
how
ah,
lovely.
that's what I thought. I thought, well, that's a lovely compliment. That's a really lovely compliment, you know?
So
So
how long was the book in from start to finish? How long has it taken?
it was over 2 years. Over 2 years. And every time I thought it was finished, it just kept going on and on from editing. And then, of course, when the publishers had it, it kept coming back. And this has to be, you know, we changed this, or the photograph needs to be maybe slightly larger, or maybe swapped, or, you know, and all the plant names and italics all had to be done. And then, even at the very end, then, of course, I had to choose the color of the ribbon, the inset color for the book. It just kept going. But it's been fantastic. I would have never dreamed so much work could go into writing a book.
I think actually my book has just arrived. The post girl has just
it?
put something by my door, so I'm hoping that I have a hard copy now. So I'm can't
Well, do you
wait
want?
to actually
Well,
see
do you want
that.
to go? Do you want to go and grab it, and I'll chat or something?
Let me have a quick look. Hang on a
Okay, you
second.
go, and I'll tell people here, because Pimpernel Press last week they were getting the deliveries in, and I think on Friday evening they were going to try and get a copy out to Mike. So he's gone to the door. We only have two copies here in Ireland still, actually. The boat was coming in this weekend with a lot of books for here. But up to now, I've only had two copies here. So I think Michael might have a copy. He's gone. Here he's coming back. No, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have it. Okay.
Oh, that's disappointing. I thought, wouldn't that be
Never mind.
lovely if it actually arrived while you were here? Right. So how long did the book take to write from start to finish? That's what we were talking
Yeah,
about.
so it took over 2 years. It took over 2 years. And actually, at the very beginning, Mike, because you're writing now, you'll be writing a book. But
Hope
I would
so.
I
I
had
have a book up there.
Do you?
I do, yeah.
Oh, very interesting. Okay. So, well, when I started to write, I was thinking, how do I actually go about putting a book together or everything? Where do you even start? Like, I had no idea where to start. And Jane just said to me, she said, go into a shop and get one of those, those cork notice boards or something, and little pens and little notepads, and just put all your ideas together. And that's what I did. I actually sat in front of the note board, all my little pens, little color papers, and say, okay, I'm going to talk about, and I literally had no idea where to start. No idea. I thought, okay, I'm going to talk about color, definitely. So color was one. Pin it up. There's color. Definitely wildlife. I want to talk about tulips because I love tulips. And it went like this. I have to talk about, design, because I teach design. So it was literally building up all the ideas and then seeing how they would flow in a book.
Wow.
That's literally how I started. And I started with the tulips because it was that time of year when I started writing. And we're just going into spring, and I love that, spring and tulips. So I started with that. Then I did my color chapter. Pot displays are a big, the pots here are a big attraction of people. And there's a lot in that, of course, a lot of information. It's all very practical information, the pots. And then, of course, the very last chapter, it is my favorite chapter, called Embracing Nature. And that was really just a call out for, and I think it's challenging. What I've said in a lot of ways is probably challenging to some people, because I wasn't talking about putting up, bee hotels and all of this. I have a problem with all this. I have a problem with all of that. We have to ask ourselves, why are we doing this? Why are we putting up bee hotels? I
I'm
mean,
glad it's
that's.
not just me.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad you said that, Mike, because I haven't really said this, but I do say it in the book. I mean, that's the conversation we have to have. Why are we doing these things and no one is having that conversation? We're putting up bee hotels and we're putting up pretty little annual flowers, pollinator plants for the bees, but why are we doing this? And that's the big conversation. And I've addressed it a little bit in the book in a sentence or two. And for me, that goes back to supporting organic methods of farming.
I
And
had a
then, you know.
client who bought a bee hotel and said, look, I've got this bee hotel. And I very carefully tried to say, well, where do you think the bees go when people haven't made bee hotels? Nature is out there. We need to
Yeah.
provide a habitat.
Habitat.
So maybe we should get down
Yeah.
from that soapbox.
Yeah. That's another conversation.
That's
But
definitely another conversation.
my very last few pages are about that, about embracing nature and about embracing a little bit of, well, I'd say imperfection in our gardens. This goal we have of pristineness and neatness and tidiness, we have to let that go a little bit. And there's nothing that exciting or beautiful about a very pristine garden. It can be the opposite, actually. They mightn't be beautiful at all, actually.
Now,
So the last few pages are about that, about how do we embrace nature into our garden, and a celebration of that as well. It's a real celebration of that, and our duty to do that. We have a duty to do that.
absolutely.
So.
Now, aside from your beautiful words, there's the B word again, the beautiful words. There's some stunning photography, and I think pretty much every image within that book could be framed and would be a fantastic shot. So shout out for some of the photographers and how
Okay.
involved were you with the selection and the framing of pictures there?
Well, I was totally involved.
I thought you might be.
I think Jane Parrott said to me the very should you micromanaged that book and did I? Sorry about that. I bought it in and the designers and everything I did, yeah. And that goes back to my own thing about being a painter and producing a product that I want. I knew exactly what I wanted in my head. I knew the photographs. I mean, I have thousands of photographs over the years. I knew which ones I wanted smaller or bigger or not at all. So I chose the ones that that related to the content, of course. They had to relate to the content. So I have my own photographs. And then of course Jason Ingram and Clive Nichols, your two amazing photographers over there in the UK, they have been here before for photo shoots. And Jason Ingram, actually, he commented when he was taking photographs here. He said, "I can put my camera literally anywhere and I have a photograph." He said, "Sometimes you have to go looking for the in the garden looking for something." He said, "I can turn my camera anywhere and I have a composition." So those two English photographers are in it and two Irish photographers. So I approached all of them and asked them would they consider having their photographs in the book, and they were all delighted. There's two Irish photographers, Richard Murphy and Kieran Neary. Kieran Neary is a wildlife photographer, calls himself an amateur photographer. Hobby photographer, but beautiful, beautiful photographs. So he's been down here, and I told him I'm writing a book. Any chance of those blue tits or the frogs or whatever? So he came down a few times and captured all the wildlife photographs are his. Well, most of them are his. Some of them are mine.
Okay, well, for
So
everybody out
I
there,
have the book here,
oh, do you do?
right in front of me.
I was so excited then when I saw the post lady come. I thought that would be my copy of the book here.
Sorry, it's very different seeing it. I suppose seeing it, I'd been seeing it on the computer for months and months. Just
Of course.
it's very different to physically, hold it in your hand like that,
Oh, look at it.
and
It's lovely.
just to hold it. It's lovely. Yeah, it's
Well,
lovely.
for everybody out there, Grounded in the Garden by TJ Maher, out on the 7th of March. It's a must have. It's a beautiful book. And I see a lot
Oh,
of
thank you.
books, but it's for me, it's connecting on that spiritual level, the nature, the gardening, the plants, the beautiful photography. It's definitely going to be, as soon as that arrives through the post, it will be, as like you say, it's nothing like a hard copy sort of book in your hand. Now, for those who haven't been to the garden, you do open the garden, don't you?
Yeah, we opened the garden to the public, and of course, we have tours here as well. So we opened it to the public, but this year we're going to open every Friday and every Sunday for the season, April to September.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, because we only open every Sunday, you see. And even the tulips, we have thousands of tulips. And of course, you only get maybe 6 weeks, so that's only 6 Sundays. For all the work that goes in, I said we have to let people see them.
A lot of effort for just
A
six.
lot of effort, a lot of
Yeah.
effort. But it's nice. It's nice to open the garden and share it, And one of the other reasons I love to share the garden with people is because I challenge people to think a little bit differently about gardening. That it doesn't have to be pristine, or what's a weed, or what's not a weed. And I love this conversation. Like, I don't allow the word weed here. Well, not that I don't allow it, but I say to people when they come in, in groups, that we don't use the word weed. So that immediately challenged people. Well, what is a weed then? Why does anyone use the word weed? Because for me, they're just a collection of plants. They're native or they're not native, but so it's anyway, that's another big conversation.
And aside from opening the garden, you also run a course as well, don't you?
I run my own garden course here. It's going into its 6th year now, I think. So it's color, creating borders, propagation, everything to do with this garden from March to November. So we'll plant seeds in March, for all the annuals, the cosmos, and all of those plants. And then at the end of the year, we'll take seeds from the same plant. So we'll go the garden season really in a
The
year.
whole
So
cycle of
I love
gardening.
teaching the whole cycle in a year. So I love teaching.
So where
I
does the
love teaching.
teaching thing come from? Because again, sort of like given our conversations earlier, how sort of like we were sort of like as youngsters, I was a trainer for many, many years, which
Are you,
so
Mike?
yeah, and I just wondered where it came from for you.
Oh, well, I suppose back in the psychiatric hospitals, I was teaching art there while I was painting.
Yes, you
So
did say, yeah.
I've always done a little bit of something like that. Of course, this is much that was kind of, just sitting in a group painting and chatting and whatever. This is much more structured, of course. It's much more structured. And I give out notes and, plant notes and all of that. It's nice. It's nice just to share it with people and really the wildlife as well, showing them the hedgerows and our native plants.
Wonderful. What's next? What's next for you? What can you tell
What
me?
next? What's next? I have no plans, except I have no plans really. I mean, the book is there's I was just when you went looking for your postman there, I was telling people that the book has got into Dublin, I hope, yesterday or the day before. I have a lot of copies coming here, and then for the shops in Ireland. So there are only two copies in the country up to now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you're one of the very first privileged people to get one as well in the next few days.
Well, I hope so.
So my plan is that, and I suppose as well, it makes me feel very vulnerable putting out this book. It was one thing to write it, you know, because you're writing on your own, and my cat was on my lap writing, and it's all very you're just writing. It's
Yeah.
kind of an abstract thing, even though you know it's going to be a book. But now the fact that someone can pick it up and read it and, you know, read my musings and stuff, I suppose it does make me feel a little bit vulnerable. But then I think there's a strength in that as well. I feel strong in showing my vulnerability, actually. You know, because I know that
Absolutely, yeah.
it'll give other people strength to embrace themselves and, you know,
Yeah, I think
all of that.
that's the
So.
thing where so people, whoever writes a book, you say you're putting yourself into these pages, which people will take away,
Yeah.
and it's cathartic, it's
It is.
energetic doing it, but then there is this
It is.
moment when it will appear in shops on bookshelves, and people will pick it
Yeah.
up and take it away.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. That's a funny thing. Yeah.
It will
But
be fine because it's a
it will
beautiful
be
book.
fun.
It will be,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I was conscious of what I was writing all the time. It is personal and stuff, but no, I'm proud of it. I think
Good.
yeah, I'm proud of it, you know. And it's lovely. Thank you so much for saying your words about loving the book, because only a few people have seen this book so far. So, but anybody who's seen it, I've got a tremendous response from them. So, and that's really nice. I have to say, that's really nice.
You'll need to get used to that, TJ, because you're going to have a lot more. It was from the moment I started reading, it was comfortable. It was I loved it. What else can I say? It that word love, that's what I felt.
Love.
And as I say, before you leave today, we'll ask you to read out some of the introduction because it
Okay.
struck a real chord with me. And I was just that's it. And the photography, it's just yeah. You're going to have to get used to it, TJ. There's going to be a lot of love coming for the book.
Mike, thank you so much. Do you want me to read this little piece you
Yeah, if
marked
you
out?
would, please, that would be lovely.
Okay. The idea of writing a book based on our garden has been rolling around in my mind for quite a while. I knew from the beginning that this was not only going to be a practical how-to garden book. Interwoven with the practical, I wanted to share something more thoughtful, maybe even spiritual. I want to share with you what I have learned by being here in the garden in the presence of nature. In learning these lessons, I have slowly started to awaken to who I am, and instead of running, walk more gently through my life. I must pause and sit at times to see and hear, reflect and understand. Nature teaches me what this fleeting act of living is all about, living in the now. There you go.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
TJ, it's been an absolute privilege and honor.
Likewise.
Eventually, we had a lot of technical issues. So a big shout out to Simon today for
Yeah, we did.
throwing us an anchor and getting us sorted. Thank you for your
We
time.
did.
Appreciated, and good luck with the book.
Mike, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
TJ's book, which I did eventually get just a couple of days later, Grounded in the Garden, published by Pimpernel Press today, the 7th of March, and I know it's going to do particularly well. Now, my thanks to TJ for taking time out of his schedule to come and have a chat with us today. And thank you to all of you for tuning in each and every week, listening to me indulge myself in my passion of gardening plants, and talking to those people who share that passion with me. And I know you all share that passion as well because you keep coming back week after week. So thank you for that and for your wonderful reviews. And if you are able to leave a review, that would be wonderful. If you're new to the podcast, hello and welcome on board. It's lovely to have you here. Now, you can follow me on my Instagram account where you will find me as Mike_thegardener. And you can also read my fortnightly column in Amateur Gardening Magazine. Right now, I'm off out into my own garden because it's time to start sowing seeds. March is here. Let's get on out there and start sowing seeds. So bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.